Ephesians chapter 5. We are engaged in the second section as we're breaking up chapter 5 into individual sections, just like we did for the previous chapters. Second section, which we're beginning in verse 7. And I'll read through to the end of verse 16. What we're doing is we're taking them in chunks of being marked off by the sentence breaks that Paul uses, where Paul uses the word therefore. So let's start in verse 7 of chapter 5. Paul says, "Therefore, do not become partners with them. For at one time you were darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true. And try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. But when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible, for anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, 'Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you.' Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil." All right, we had done an additional study in Ephesians this Sunday, in which we tackled verses 9 and 10, "For the fruit of the light is found in all that is good, right, and true, and try to discern what is pleasing to the Lord." And we saw that those verses were essentially practical application of the principle that he had introduced in that section of identifying us as children of the light, and that we are identified by the Lord as light. We're certainly not the source of the light. The Lord himself is the source of the light, but because we're in a new and spiritual relationship with the Lord who is light, and in our new birth, we actually, in the most amazing concept, I think, of the New Testament, we partake, as Peter describes it, in the divine nature itself. Doesn't mean we become divine in any sense of the word, but we partake of his nature. And so the one who is light, when he gives birth to us in the new birth, he actually gives birth to children of light. But of course, as these newly born children of light, we're expected and called by the Lord to walk in light like he walks in light. And so verses 9 and 10 are practical instruction of how to go about doing that. We talked for some time about the idea of all that is good and right and true, identifying what those things are. Those are the basics of Christian discipleship understanding, being able to correctly and immediately identify in all choices in front of us in life what the good thing to do is, what the right thing to do is, what the true thing to do is. And then even going a step beyond that as we go on into a greater degree of Christian growth in becoming more and more like Christ by his grace. And that is learning how to discern what is pleasing to the Lord. Not just in the clear and obviously good, right, and true things, but in all of the gray areas that confront us in life. All of the difficult to know for sure what's the best thing to do in this circumstance. And understanding that in the new birth, the Lord has designed his children, the children of light, with an entirely new base motivator in life, and that is he's transformed us from people who formerly were motivated by pleasing ourselves first, foremost, and always, to people that please him and are concerned to please him. And that requires, in some circumstances, a real faculty to be able to discern what would be pleasing in your eyes in this circumstance, Lord. And, of course, the commitment of heart to want to do what he reveals to us as the pleasing thing. Now, that brings us up to our next verses. And I'll read again, starting in verse 11, just the next three verses. And we'll see how far we get in this tonight. Verse 11, "Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret, but when anything is exposed by the light, it becomes visible, for anything that becomes visible is light. Therefore it says, awake, O sleeper, and it goes on from there. I probably won't get all the way to verse 14 tonight, but we'll see how far we get, as I said. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness. All right, let's define our terms, first of all. The word unfruitful is an obvious contrast to what? Fruitful. And it literally means without fruit. Or like we would consider barren. Like barren ground is ground that is incapable of producing a harvest. You can plant seeds, good, healthy, quality seeds. But if the ground is barren, the seeds won't grow. No matter how much good intentions you have in planting them, no matter how much you water them, if there are no nutrients in the soil, if there is no goodness in the soil itself, if it's barren ground, it will not provide a living environment for those seeds to sprout and to produce a harvest. A tree that doesn't produce fruit, and you know, we're familiar with the famous circumstance where Jesus cursed the fig tree and it, you know, it became instantly barren, and you know, he was using that as a spiritual image to show or to demonstrate what was going on in the covenant circumstances of Israel as a nation in relationship to the Lord. But we all understand that concept. Barren equals not just a tree or ground that has no fruit, but a tree or ground that is incapable of producing fruit. All right? So, let's look at another detail in this initial verse. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness. All right. What's unfruitful here is specifically what Paul calls the works of darkness. Now, in our context, this is an obvious comparison and contrast in terms of concepts that he's lining up side by side with the whole concept that he's just developed in the few verses before this of us being born again as children of light and identifying us as light in the Lord. And so he says what he's contrasting here, of course, is darkness to light. And the key concern in terms of identifying us as children of light is what the Lord was after in that, which is that the children of light would produce the phrase that he used was up in verse 9. It says, for the fruit of light is found in all that is good and right and true. So what's being contrasted here is fruit of light with works of darkness. Now this is a continuing pattern as Paul describes, in a sense, these two roads that are ahead of us in life. These options that we have, these lifestyle choices that we always have in front of us. And the pairs of categories that he establishes for us are between works and fruit. Now, it's a pattern that he revisits in the book of Galatians, in a passage that we're all familiar with. I won't turn us there, I'll just refer to it. But when he talks about the fruit of the Spirit, that's something that we're all familiar with, okay? The character qualities that the Lord looks to produce in us and works to produce in us after we're born again, after we come to know Him, He calls those character qualities the fruit of the Spirit. Those are the same category as the fruit of the light that he's referring to here. But just before he listed the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5, he gives a longer list of what he calls the works of, does anybody remember from the Galatians list? The works of the flesh. So here, he's referring to the same category, But in the Galatians text, he labels it with a slightly different label so that we can compare the two concepts and understand that he's identifying the same thing. The works of darkness are the works of the flesh. And it's just interesting that in the good category, it's always identified as fruit. In the bad category, it's always identified as works. For instance, and you'll hear sometimes Christians confusing the terminology and the categories a little bit by referring to the fruits of the flesh or the works of light, for instance. And the Lord intentionally puts them in different, using different terminology into different categories to emphasize that the works of darkness and the works of the flesh are the production of the efforts of the rebellious, fallen, sinful heart that is opposed to all of God's purposes and standards. Whereas the fruit of the light, the fruit of the Spirit, is always a result of the working of a greater influence than ourselves. In other words, we don't trace the origin of the good things produced in us in salvation back to ourselves at the core. We trace it back to the influences and the workings of the Spirit of God in our hearts. And so it's the fruit that He produces, whereas the works of darkness and the works of the flesh are the works that we ourselves produce when we're left to ourselves without the transforming power of salvation. All right, so we have these two categories, darkness and light. One is a set of behaviors, choices, and habits and lifestyles that are identified as works of darkness or works of the flesh. And the other is a new set of behaviors, new set of habits, a new lifestyle that's the result of salvation, the result of the new birth and the working of the Spirit of God, which he calls the fruit of the Spirit or the fruit of light. Now, reading again verse 7, verse 11. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness. The phrase take part, and it's literally take no part, of course. Take no part. But separating these two words, take part, is a term which refers to a participation, leading to a partnership. All right, so what we have here is a word of exhortation given to the Christian community. We were all, according to Paul's instruction, formerly part of a world of darkness, a world cut off from right relationship with God, a world disconnected from the life of God, a world that all of our activities were oriented out of these works of the flesh, these works of the darkness. Even our best moments, in some sense, were flowing out of this aspect of dark works and activities. Okay? Now we're born again. We're brought out of that category of darkness into a brand new category of light. And he says, now that you're in the light, now that you are of the light, now that I call you to walk in this world as children of the light, I am reminding you with a simple and basic word of exhortation to no longer participate in the former pattern of life, the former habits, the former behaviors that you once freely and actively participated in, that marked your life as it used to be before the saving work of Christ. We are to no longer participate in those. And the concept of leading to partnership is simply this, that there's a warning embedded in the exhortation. And the warning is, if you do, after coming to the light, and after coming to know the Lord, and after being changed and transformed into a child of light, if you make the decision, as Christians can do, to participate in some former pattern or behavior of darkness, some work of darkness, don't fool yourself into thinking that it has no influence long term in your life. Simply put, it's very common among believers, once they have come to know the Lord, to occasionally be tempted. I mean, we're tempted more than occasionally, but occasionally be tempted to the point of yielding to the temptation and sinning. And whenever we sin, it's some sin of our former life, sin of our former pattern, sin of who we used to be and the things that we used to enjoy. And I'm talking about enjoy in a sinful way. When we choose to participate in those things, what happens is not just, okay, well, I participated in that and I don't feel good about that, so, you know, good, I'm glad that's over with, and I hope the Lord will forgive me, and I ask the Lord to forgive me, and then I just move on from there. Without understanding that the kind of participation that's being described here is a participation that in itself has a momentum factor to it, all right? So that whenever a believer who is a child of light chooses to introduce or to reintroduce influences of darkness into their heart, what happens is they are reintroducing a factor of negative momentum into their life. And I'm talking about spiritual negative momentum. So it's not just a nice, neat little thing where, okay, I sinned and I'm done with that, and now on my own terms, I'll just do whatever is right from this point forward. But that whenever I open that door, it's kind of like the old mythology in Greek mythology of Pandora's box. You know, the story of Pandora's box. Are you guys familiar with that story? You know, and I don't want to get too far off into the myth, but basically she opens this box that contains all the evil in the world. And once she opens it, what's the result? She, you know, you can't stuff all that evil back in the box. Once it's opened, it's open. And so what has happened in our salvation is the Lord has sealed us off, in a sense, from the influences of the former works of darkness. But every time we choose to re-participate in those things, it opens a doorway for old momentum to regain its influence in our lives, and it makes it doubly difficult the next time you're faced with the same temptation. So that you sin once, and then the next temptation is not nearly as easy for you to face and to say no to. You can still, by the grace of God, overcome that temptation, but recognize that there is this sense of growing partnership that begins to develop in your heart with each choice that we make to participate in these works of darkness. And so Paul gives this very direct, basic, strong exhortation where he says to take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness. And he gives this in a what is called a, and I'm using for some of these concepts, the Greek verb tenses to just kind of drive home the point to us of how the exhortation is phrased. He uses a negative present tense imperative. We've talked about some of these before. Imperative just simply means it's a word of suggestion or command. It's an order that comes with God's authority behind it. So as soon as we hear an exhortation from the apostle of God, and he's writing inspired by the Spirit of God, he's writing on behalf of the Spirit of God, whenever he writes an exhortation like this, we need to interpret it not just as this is good, healthy Christian advice or counsel. Like, for instance, if you come and meet with me for counseling purposes, I may, at times offer you things that you're not commanded to do. They're just things for your consideration. They're options in front of you for you to consider for your own life. And you have choices on what to do with that and what not to do with that. When there's an imperative exhortation that's applied to all of the believers, That's a command that makes it a non-optional issue. Present tense just refers to every time the circumstance comes up, it's to be applied each time. I'll just put applied always, meaning it's an ongoing category of application. And negative simply means the negative aspect of this verb in this case simply means that there's the real possibility that it's currently happening. And if it is, it needs to stop. It needs to stop now. We've seen that Paul has done this several times just since we shifted into the practical application section of Ephesians from chapter 4 through the portion that we're in right now. And that is that there are in the Ephesian community of believers, just like in our community of believers, there are believers that are at all different places along the spectrum of their growth in sanctification and in the likeness of Christ. And some of us continue to struggle with patterns of behavior that we should no longer be struggling with at this point in our Christian growth. And so when we encounter this particular exhortation, we're to take it as kind of like, it's like the Lord taking all the slack out of our chain in a moment's time and saying, look, you may have given yourself permission to do this. You may have given yourself room to eventually get around to it. But when the Lord speaks this kind of word, when he says, take no part in a negative present imperative, he's saying, right now, any work of darkness that you're conscious of participating in needs to stop. It needs to stop right now, and it needs to stay stopped from this point forward. It's that kind of just blunt, direct kind of word from the Lord through Paul to us. All right? So, what is it that we're to stop? All of the old patterns. And he identifies these as unfruitful works of darkness. I mean, it would be enough, wouldn't it, if he just said the works of darkness. We know what those are, and we know that they're bad. But why would he add this modifier to describe the works of darkness with one additional detail, unfruitful? The point is, why do Christians still sin? And I don't care what the sin is. I mean, there's a whole range of sins that we have to choose from. You know, how many sins can you be tempted with? 1,000? 10,000? Whatever. I mean, there's a menu out there in the world. It's like the worst kind of a buffet table you can ever imagine. And they all taste good at the moment, but, you know, it's all, it's all killer after you digest them, okay? And the idea here is that when we do choose to sin, it's because at the moment of temptation, we go into this, like, temporary, momentary insanity phase where we're thinking at that moment, this is going to be good for me to do this. In some sense, in some twisted sense, it's going to be good for me to cheat on my income taxes. Why? Why would I ever think that? Why would it be good for me to cheat on my income taxes? I'm talking about in this temporary mode of I'm not thinking clearly. I'm not thinking as the Lord would have me to think. Because I'll gain an advantage. I'll be able to keep more money. The government doesn't deserve my money anyway. They're rotten. They're corrupt. They've got problems. They're going to mishandle it, misuse it, misspend it. It's better off in my pocket than in their pocket. So I'll just make a little adjustment here. Nobody's the wiser. Nobody needs to know. And so I'm going to compromise in this area. And it's actually a good thing that I'm doing that. Because I'll use it for some better purpose. I'll even tithe on the money I'm going to save. Or I'll send it to some orphans in India. You know? And, you know, you should be sending money to orphans in India. And you should be tithing. But you shouldn't be doing it having cheated who rightfully should be receiving that money according to other biblical principles in order to get there. And so the idea of him calling these the unfruitful works of darkness is that at the moment of temptation, every one of us thinks that we will accomplish some good thing for ourselves by sinning. And it's just a brief reminder by adding this one modifying word to say, don't be deceived about this. There is no good fruit that can possibly come from sinning. There is no good result that can be produced by rebelling against God, disobeying Him, choosing your own foolishness over His wisdom. It can't possibly produce a good result. That's the concept of not just a field without fruit, but a field that's incapable of producing fruit. And so the Lord wants us to understand, every time we're faced with the choice between, I can either do a work of darkness here, or by the grace of God, produce greater fruit of light in this option that's in front of me. One will produce long-term, luscious, nourishing, life-giving fruit, and the other will only immediately and temporarily satisfy some aspect of your fleshly desires, but will not produce any good fruit in the long run, and will only make your life barren and empty at the end. Every time you choose that route, your life becomes more barren than it would have been otherwise, and that it should be. All right, so that's the concept. Now, he gives us a practical aspect of what to do instead. He says, take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead expose them. Now, instead is pretty straightforward. No deep, mysterious definitions needed here. He's drawing a clear contrast. You have, in this world in which we live, and the world is a world of darkness. Doesn't mean there's no light in the world, because, you know, as long as the truth of God is in the world, and as long as the Spirit of God is in the world, and as long as the true people of God are in the world, there is light in the world. But outside of the boundaries of God's covenant and God's blessing, the world lies in darkness. In fact, let me emphasize this just real quickly with a quote from John. You don't have to turn there. I'll just read this. This is from John chapter 5. It says, we know that we are from God, and the whole world lies in the power of the evil one. What that means is simply the whole world is under, the world outside of covenant is under the influence of the evil one, and the evil one is, you know, the prince of darkness. And so we live in a world that is enveloped in spiritual darkness, and we are called to not exit this world after our salvation. We're called to live in this dark world, and we motor our way through this world every day. Every step we take is a step in a world of darkness, and we're constantly being exposed to dark influences, dark elements, and dark choices and dark temptations. So what do we do to handle that? How do we navigate our way through this darkened world? Well, in our old life, before Christ, before salvation, we simply participated. And we all participated in different degrees and in different individual ways, but we all participated in the dark world around us. Now, the Lord has removed us, spiritually speaking, from the world of darkness. We're still physically in the world, but spiritually now, we're in an entirely different category, the category of light, the kingdom of light. And so he says, now we're to take no part, we're to no longer participate in these unfruitful works of darkness, but instead, in contrast to our old pattern, we are to do what? Expose them. This concept is easily one of the most difficult concepts of practical Christian living that we ever have to apply. So there are two choices. You're navigating your way through life. You get up in the morning, you did this morning, and you woke up by the grace of God in a covenant relationship with the Lord who is light. You woke up in the kingdom of light. But the entire world around you is enveloped in darkness. And you couldn't just stay there in your little bubble of light. You had to at some point get up and go out into the world. Whether you went out into the world over the internet, whether you went out into the world watching TV, whether you listened to the radio, whether you went out into the community and interacted with people who are living in darkness, at one point or another throughout the day, you go out and you interact with the world around you. When you interact with the world, you have two options each and every circumstance that you find yourself in. And the two options are participate with them in their darkness, like you formerly did. And the hard part of that is, that comes easy because we had years, some of us many years, we had years of practice in participating in the unfruitful works of darkness. And so there are old habits that make it just so easy, if it's presented in the right convincing way to our hearts, to just, you know, relax and slip back into participation into old patterns, whether it's in thought, speech, or actions. That's option number one. And of course, Paul says here, don't do that anymore. Negative present imperative. Stop it and keep on stopping it. Stop it for the rest of your life. It's no longer to be considered even an option of how you respond to a world enveloped in darkness around you. You have to interact with the world, but when you do, instead, expose. All right. Let's talk about this concept. The word expose here, normally speaking, when we refer to something being exposed, like for instance, let me use a famous example from recent news. Tiger Woods, famous world famous golfer, most famous golfer ever in history, and he was considered to be like a, you know, just a model citizen in every possible way, and he had many big corporate companies that were paying him multiple millions of dollars every year just to simply go on TV and in various advertising formats to represent their companies by identifying himself with their product. Okay? Then it was suddenly and unexpectedly, and I'm sure he didn't want this to happen, but you know, it was unavoidable. It inevitably had to happen in terms of the choices he had previously made. His secret life was what? Exposed. It was exposed not in a choice that he made to, you know, come clean and own up to, you know, private dark behaviors that he had been engaged in for a considerable amount of time and in many different cases. But the media, the, you know, various ways, I don't even want to even dig into all of the backstory of how that happened, but the media exposed him. That's our normal reference to the word expose. Kind of like a decision that someone makes for you to kind of pull the covers back and to reveal what's really going on behind the scenes. That's not exactly, although that concept is included in the general idea here, it's not exactly the word that Paul chooses in this case. And it's actually a decision that the translators made to use the word expose here. The word is really the word that is most often in the New Testament translated with these words instead. Reprove, rebuke, convict, convince. It doesn't necessarily mean the idea of you've got a secret and I'm telling everybody, whether you like it or not. That's the more familiar concept of exposing something that's in the darkness. Exposing it would be bringing it into the light. That's not exactly what Paul is communicating. What he's saying instead is, let's read these concepts into the way that he words it. Take no part in the unfruitful works of darkness, but instead reprove, rebuke, convict, and convince them. Now, does that put that in a different light? What we're talking about here is that as you're navigating through life in this darkened world, you as a child of light, but you're living in a dark world, you're going to be regularly, every day, unavoidably, if you're doing what you're supposed to be doing, it'll be unavoidable. You'll be exposed to people that are living in darkness. They're living their life based on dark principles. They're living their life consciously ignoring and disregarding the Lord and His standards and His ways. They're living according to what pleases them rather than what pleases Him. When you encounter those things in those people, what do you do at the moment of that encounter? Well, there are different options. You know, we all encounter people that are living in darkness every single day. And let me just give you three options of what you can do in each circumstance. Not all three of these are being recommended here in this passage, but these are the three possibilities. You encounter someone that's rebelling against the Lord. They're disregarding Him. They're going their own way. They're pleasing themselves, and they're living in a way that is displeasing to the Lord, and it's obvious as you see that in their life. You can do number one, option number one, you can participate with them. In other words, in a lot of social circumstances, it's just a lot easier to just do what they do. And what do you gain short term when you participate with someone that is living in some way like that in darkness, and now you make the choice to just do what they do rather than doing something different than they do? Yeah, you get included in the group, in the crowd. There's acceptance. There's a certain amount of natural speaking. We're not talking about spiritual. Natural peace that you can establish between you and that other person. There's no conflict. There's no issues that arise between you and them because, you know, it's like the old saying, partners in crime. You know, you're getting along with the other person because, you know, you're compromising along with them, and it makes them feel better about what they're doing, and so there's no problems there between the two of you. That's the first option. Of course, we've already seen that that's really, for the believer, not an option at all. Although it's amazing how often believers choose to just go along with what people living in darkness are doing around them. You walk into a circumstance, let's say you're in a social environment, and you walk into a group of people that are actively engaged in sinful gossip. Have you ever opened your mouth and participated? You know, it's just so easy. It's just so easy. You just slide right in. You don't make any waves because they're already doing it, and you're part of the group, and now you're welcomed in, and they put their arm around you and said, "Hey, welcome to the Gossip Club." And here we go. So that's option number one. But let's just be clear. It's always the wrong option. Always, always, always the wrong option. And it only will produce barrenness for us because it's an unfruitful work of darkness. All right. Option number two. I walk into the same circumstance and I'm committed. I'm not going to participate with them. I am not going to do that because I know it's sinful. I know it's wrong. I know it would displease the Lord, so I am not participating. However, I don't want to make waves. So I am going to put myself in spiritual neutral. And I'm just here, just hanging out. I'm not opening my mouth and gossiping. If they want to gossip, that's their business. That's between them and the Lord. I'm not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. If I say anything about them gossiping, I'm just going to cause problems here. I'm going to make everybody mad at me. So I am just going to be here until they're done, and then we'll talk about better things after the conversation ends. Just go into neutral mode. How's that as an option? What do you think? It's better than the first one. How's that? If you're looking on a sliding scale, if the Lord is grading on the curve on the day of judgment, then option number two is workable because it's better than active participation in sin. To just stand neutrally while others are sinning around you and not open your mouth and not do anything and not say anything and just say to yourself, that's their business between them and God. It's none of my business. Right? But what you aren't accomplishing is that you aren't representing the Lord in any way in that circumstance. You know, if you look at it from the perspective of the categories that Paul creates here, and he does it by the Spirit of God, of course, he creates categories of darkness and light. And what's in between those two? There is nothing in between those two. There is only darkness and light. There's not kind of light and kind of dark. I mean, you know, in the natural world, of course, we have morning where, you know, the sun is dawning and it's growing progressively brighter and things like that. But as soon as the sun first peaks over the horizon, it's no longer dark. It is light. And it's just a deal. It's now you're dealing with degrees of light and degrees of darkness. But there is no theoretical third category. So the neutral response is also never right. But many, many, many believers default to the neutral zone when they're in awkward social circumstances because they're not sure that it's worth it to choose the third category, the third option. That the cost of the potential cost of the third response is seen as too great to run the risk of upsetting the apple cart, you know, making the other people mad at you, you know, damaging the connection you have between you and them and all of those things. And what that essentially does is it puts me, in, when I'm doing that, in the category of what the Bible describes as pleasing men rather than pleasing God. And we saw Sunday that our core heart motivator is meant to be one who pleases God. And there are times, daily, there are circumstances where I have to choose who, what's more important to me right now, pleasing this person in front of me or pleasing God. And you can't always juggle both of them and keep them equally happy. But if it comes, push comes to shove, and you're going to please one and not the other, don't choose the person over God. Now, does that mean, and we'll talk about this in a moment when we look at the third option, does that mean you have to choose an option where you make yourself as ordinary as possible to the person that you're dealing with that is participating in an unfruitful work of darkness, and you just, you know, you just lambast them whenever, you know, you see them doing anything that's not according to the standards of God, and, you know, you just make yourself as hated as possible in their eyes on purpose? No, of course not. Not even close to that. But the third option is this. The third option is expose the works of darkness that you see being participated in and acted out in front of you. And you expose the works of darkness by reproving, rebuking, convicting, and convincing. Those concepts. Now, there's not one set way to always do this in every circumstance. Every circumstance requires a measure of discernment. This is where we apply the trying to discern what's pleasing to the Lord principle, not just in terms of the actions that the other people are doing and I'm choosing to withhold myself from, but even trying to discern what's pleasing to the Lord in the way that I go about exposing the unfruitful works of darkness that I encounter in my daily interactions with a darkened world and a darkened world population around me. So that I come into a circumstance, I didn't plan on it, I didn't choose it, but here I am, it's right in front of me, there's this pool of unfruitful works of darkness that I'm now encountering, and I have these three options. I can jump right into the pool and swim around participating in it, or I can just stand at the edge of the pool and just say, I'm not getting in the pool, but I'm just going to wait until you get out of the pool and then I'll talk to you. Or I can do what I'm actually exhorted to do in this circumstance, and it is an exhortation. I can expose the unfruitful work of darkness that person is swimming in. And I do that. I gave you these alternate definitions of the word expose, but let me talk practically speaking about different ways we can actually do this. Let me start with a negative example. And this is along the lines of what I was talking about. Do you want to make yourself as hated as possible by the people that you're attempting to reach by exposing what they're doing? Any of you ever heard of Westboro Baptist Church? Pastor Fred Phelps. You might have seen this group on the news at some time or another. There's a Baptist church and this particular pastor that has a twisted interpretation and understanding of this principle that we're studying together in Ephesians 5. He is committed as a pastor, and the church is following his lead. They're committed to exposing the unfruitful works of darkness, and they're very vigorous and they're very active in exposing the unfruitful works of darkness, but they do so in an incredibly unwise and foolish and unfruitful way. What this church does is they spend on average about $250,000 a year in traveling around the country to different events that are newsworthy events, events that would catch the national media's attention, and they picket these events. And they picket them with signs that communicate messages that you just won't find in the Bible, but that they, in their twisted interpretation, believe the Bible is communicating. For instance, like after 9/11, you know, when the nation experienced the tragedy of the destruction of the Twin Towers, they picketed the funerals of many of the people that perished in those tower collapses. And they picketed them with signs like, you know, God hates America, and things of that nature. Things that were, you know, that are just intentionally as inflammatory as possible. They're doing this to catch the media's attention, and I mean, there are many other signs that I could give you examples of that I just won't even repeat just because it's inappropriate. You know, they should never have written the sign. That it's kind of like what Paul says just a line later, where he says in verse 12, thank you, for it is shameful even to speak of the things that they do in secret. You know, and he's talking to believers in terms of we need to be discreet in how we deal with certain categories of sin that people participate in. But this church is not discreet at all. They're, you know, they're as out front and as ornery and as nasty as they can possibly be in order to gain the media's attention. We're not talking about that kind of exposing. Their efforts have only caused the Christian community to be hated and to be, I mean, unnecessarily hated. We're a valid target of the world's hatred because we represent the light, and the world is in darkness and the darkness hates the light. But we don't need to intentionally make ourselves more hated just because of our personalities and our approach. You know, you don't see Jesus having that kind of approach in dealing with the world around him. You know, he's the one that was labeled by his opponents as the friend of sinners, and he literally did spend friendship time with sinners. You know, it's an entirely different kind of approach. But what I'm talking about is, let's look at a passage that describes this principle in action. Turn over with me, if you would, to 2 Timothy chapter 2. So we're talking about you're going through your life on a daily basis. You're a child of light. You're living in a dark world. You encounter some unfruitful work of darkness that someone's practicing and participating in. What do you do and how do you handle that? The first, and in each case, what we're called to do is to expose them. But I'm going to give you three options of how, practically speaking, to expose them. The first option is through our words. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 24. There are some circumstances that the Lord will lead you into where you see people are committed to works of darkness and will call upon you to open your mouth and speak, to say something about what they're doing, and to say something that exposes that what they're doing is wrong and sinful. But when it comes time to expose it, how should you speak? You should speak in this manner. Verse 24 of chapter 2, 2 Timothy. And the Lord's servant must not be quarrelsome, but kind to everyone. Now, that includes the person that you're having to confront about their sinful activity in some specific work of darkness. So you want to approach them when it comes time to speak, and you don't want to quarrel with them. You want to instead be kind to them. Is it possible to correct someone but correct them with kindness and a non-quarrelsome spirit? It's not only possible, it's required. This is what we're called to do when it comes time to speak in these kind of difficult and challenging circumstances. Be kind to everyone, able to teach. What does that mean? It means you have to understand the principle that they're violating and how it will affect their lives. So that when it comes time to correct them, you're not just saying, that's bad, stop it. You're trying to help them to understand why it's bad for them and how their lives would be better to obey God and to do what's right in His eyes and pleasing in His sight than it would be for them to continue to disregard Him. And that may require you to tell them some story from the Bible. It may be extrapolating some principle from the Bible and putting it in more natural terms, kind of like telling them a parable, so to speak, but without consciously referencing the Bible if you think that they would immediately disregard what you have to say if you even bring up the Bible. You can communicate biblical principles without saying, hey, I'm about to say a biblical principle here. You know, you can be wise as a serpent and gentle as a dove in the way that you actually interact with them. And then patiently enduring evil. What's necessary to understand there is that anytime you make the decision in dealing with an unfruitful work of darkness that's being practiced by someone that you're encountering, and you are going to decide to do what's right in the eyes of the Lord and expose this, what you're running the risk of is a reaction from them. You know, some people, I've had circumstances where I obeyed the Lord in this principle and had them, I mean, an unbeliever, turn around afterwards and thank me, tell me that they appreciated that I called it to their attention and that they could see the wisdom of what I was sharing. But I've had many other cases where I wasn't thanked at all. And that as soon as I dared to correct someone or bring something to someone's attention or to share some principle with them based upon, you know, biblical concepts, that I then became the target of their angry guilt for having their hearts convicted that they weren't living according to God's standard in this area of their life. Nobody really likes to be exposed in that way. And so he says, being in verse 24, kind to everyone, able to teach, patiently enduring evil, simply meaning that if they react and respond to you in the wrong way, you know, does that mean, okay, the gloves are off now and I'm going to really let you have it? You know, I tried the kind way, but you didn't listen. So now I'm going to, you know, I'm going to try a more direct, you know, blasting of you. No, you maintain that heart of kindness and you are patient and endure even an evil reaction if they give you an evil reaction. And then he says, correcting his opponents with gentleness. God may perhaps grant them repentance, leading to a knowledge of the truth. And they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil after being captured by him to do his will. The idea here is, of course, all of our efforts to expose the unfruitful works of darkness are to have this underlying background concern, which is we're doing this for a redemptive reason. Our hope is that by the Lord bringing me into this circumstance where I'm encountering this person who is participating in this unfruitful work of darkness, and I take the risk of obeying God to expose this work of darkness, I may win this person through this exact circumstance. It may be this thing that I'm confronting them with that is the very thing that the Lord will use to draw him to himself. And it may lead to their salvation. So our first option in exposing is to expose with words. And of course, these are kind words. These are patient words. These are gentle words. These are instructive words, according to the principles outlined here in the Timothy passage. But they're all aimed at reproving, rebuking, convicting, and convincing. So you can even rebuke, which is a pretty strong concept, but do it in a kind and gentle, instructive way. And that's what we are called to do as we represent the Lord to the world. Now, does that mean every time you confront a work of darkness that you must speak? If that were the case, we'd be talking all day long. I mean, really. Unfruitful works of darkness are surrounding us all the time. And not every circumstance is a circumstance that you're required to speak to. There are some where the Lord will stir your heart and He'll just make it clear to you. Open your mouth and speak. Represent me represent my ways in this circumstance. But there are other options, and there are other ways to actually expose the unfruitful works of darkness without a word. The second is, of course, deeds. So the first option is words. Second option is deeds. Now, understand this. I'm putting these in different, just for the sake of a list to help us to remember. But you can sometimes combine words and deeds as well. You know, it's not only one or only the other. Let's turn to a passage in the Sermon on the Mount that we're familiar with. Matthew chapter 5. Verse 14. Oh, I'm in the Gospel of Mark. That won't help. Matthew 5, 14. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others. Others who? Others that aren't in the Lord yet. Others that aren't saved yet. Others that don't know the Lord the way that you have come to know the Lord. Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. What's happening here is that you're walking through a darkened world around you. You see someone practicing a dark behavior, an unfruitful work of darkness, and you may be in a circumstance where you have the option to do something, but instead of opening your mouth first and calling attention to the fact that they're doing the wrong thing, there are many cases that the Lord provides for us where doing the right thing will communicate a message to the person that's doing the wrong thing, because they'll observe your behavior and they'll see the difference and the contrast between what they're choosing and how they're living and what you're choosing and how you're living. And that your good works, your good deeds, your obedient behavior before the Lord, your God-honoring behavior, can in itself be a convicting influence, an element to the people around you. For instance, let's say you're in a circumstance, in a business situation, and one person says, you know what, I'm going to cut this corner because, and it's a legal corner, it's an ethical corner, I'm going to cut this corner because I just need to do that in order to make ends meet. And you don't even have to say, hey, don't you cut that corner, that's wrong, you shouldn't be doing that. You could say simply, you know what, I'm not going to cut that corner. And you can say that out loud to them, I'm not going to cut that corner, I don't think the Lord would want me to cut that corner. And you just do the right thing and let your deeds be the convicting influence on their heart, the contrast between where they're living and where you're living. Now there's a third, and this is a little more subtle. It's just as important, but it's a little more subtle than specific actions or specific deeds, and that is holding higher standards. Okay, what I mean by this is simply that everybody in the world around us, even the people living in darkness, have standards. Everybody draws the line in different places. We as the children of light are called to learn our standards all over again from the Lord and to adopt His standards in place of our old standards that we had established for ourselves. And we'll be brought into circumstances where it will be a determining factor which standard we choose to live according to in comparison, in contrast to the people who are living their own standards out in the darkened world. Let me just give you an example of what I'm talking about from a practical circumstance that Sandy and I dealt with in regards to an interaction with one of our neighbors. We were invited over to watch a television show with our neighbors one time. And we've developed a friendship with these neighbors, and we're actively pursuing relationship with them. in hope that we can eventually reach them for the Lord. We've had some conversations, but you know, they're in a place where they don't really want direct conversations about the things of the Lord, so we don't talk a lot directly. But what does happen in the day-to-day interaction with our neighbors is that certain circumstances come up that expose that their standards are not the same as our standards, and then the Lord can speak in that circumstance. So we were invited over to watch a television show that they were actually just rubbing their hands in glee over the idea that we were going to come over and watch the show. It was a comedy show. They were anticipating us, all four of us, having a good, enjoyable, you know, fun evening watching this comedy and enjoying the jokes together and whatnot. And we were watching the show, and it's not a show I would ever choose to watch on my own. But, you know, most of it was fine. It was just, you know, low-level, you know, humor. And but nothing that was really an issue, nothing that was really a problem. Then, because I didn't know where the show was going, but suddenly, and I mean suddenly, it was like the next scene, there was a situation. I won't describe the situation in the scene, but there was a portrayal in this scene of an incredibly, like I was shocked that it was even on television. You know, it was an incredibly inappropriate, you know, like really dark behavior. One of those that Paul would put in the category of, it's shameful even to talk about these things. And it's being presented as a joke on the screen. Now, at that moment, you know, my internal warnings are going off, and I know I'm in one of these moments. I'm in one of these circumstances. I've been actively pursuing a relationship with these people, and I realize at this moment, if I mishandle this, I can totally undermine the whole purpose of why I've been pursuing relationship with them. If I just sit here and watch it and laugh, I'm participating. And so I've undermined any idea that I live according to a higher standard. If I sit here and don't laugh and just go into neutral mode, I'm approving of what they're laughing at, and I've lost the opportunity to communicate something important to their hearts. But the third option is I can just, you know, I can get all huffy and you know, be offended and blow them out of the water and say, how dare you bring me over to watch such, you know, wicked activity on your television set, and blow the relationship out of the water for all future purposes and offend them in an unnecessarily deep way. So what do I do in that situation? How do I handle it? You know, what's the right response in that circumstance? Well, what I chose to do in that circumstance, I believe the Lord gave me grace to do so in that particular situation, was that I can't participate, I can't laugh, and I can't just sit here in neutral. I've got to do something. And so I just, you know, I leaned over and I spoke to the neighbors and I said, you know what, I'm sorry, but I really don't want to watch what's, you know, being presented on the show here. I think we'll call it an evening. And we got up with, you know, gentle, kind attitude in our hearts, gave him a hug, thanked him for, you know, having us over for the evening, said we enjoyed the evening overall, and we said our goodbyes and we left. And I didn't go on a big, you know, rant about the TV show, but it stuck with them. And they knew that there was a clear light and dark contrast. And I could sense that there was a real spiritual conviction going on in their hearts. Now, it hasn't produced a salvation result in either one of their lives yet, but I'm still hopeful in that regard and praying, you know, toward that end. But the idea being that there is a way in each circumstance, no matter how socially challenging and awkward it is, for us to remain true to the standards of the Lord and still obey this command to expose rather than participate, and do so in a fruitful way, do so in an effective way, a way that actually brings to light the real core issues of people's hearts that the Lord is really after, the Lord is really working to get after in each one of their lives. All right, we'll stop here for tonight. We left the last verse of that portion that I started reading tonight, and we'll pick that up, Lord willing, next teaching, and also finish out, I think, going all the way through verse 16. So God bless you, and I'll look forward to seeing you over the weekend.